Chapter 9. Crim Tartary. Last Tuesday week, Baron Spinach and a number of gentlemen, attached to the former dynasty, appeared in arms, crying, "God save Rosalba, the first queen of Crim Tartary!" and surrounding a lady whom report describes as odiful exceedingly. Her history may be authentic, is certainly most romantic. The personage calling herself Rosalba states that she was brought out of the forest, 15 years since, by a lady in a car drawn by dragons. This account is certainly improbable, that she was left in the palace garden of Blombodinga, where Her Royal Highness the Princess Angelica, now married to His Royal Highness Bobo, Crown Prince of Crim Tartary, found the child, and, with that elegant benevolence which has always distinguished the heiress of the throne of Paphlagonia, gave the little outcast a shelter and a home. Her parentage not being known, and her garb very humble, the foundling was educated in the palace in a menial capacity, under the name of Betsinda. She did not give satisfaction, and was dismissed, carrying with her, certainly, part of a mantle and a shoe, which as he had on when first found. According to her statement, she quitted Blombodinga about a year ago, since which time as he has been with the Spinachi family. On the very same morning the Prince Giglio, nephew to the King of Paphlagonia, a young prince whose character for talent and order were, to say truth, none of the highest, also quitted Blombodinga, and has not been since heard of. What an extraordinary story. Said Smith and Jones, two young students, Giglio's especial friends. Ha! What is this? Giglio went on, reading, second edition, express. We hear that the troop under Baron Spinachi has been surrounded, and utterly routed, by General Count Hagenarmo, and the Soidison Princess has sent a prisoner to the capital. University News. Yesterday, at the schools, the distinguished young student, Mr. Giles, read a Latin oration, and was complimented by the Chancellor of Bisforo, Dr. Prugnero, with the highest university honor, the wooden spoon. Never mind that stuff, says Giles, greatly disturbed. Come home with me, my friends. Gallant Smith. Intrepid Jones. Friends of my studies, partakers of my academic toils, I have that to tell which shall astonish your honest minds. Go it, old boy. Cries the impetuous Smith. Talk away, my buck. Says Jones, a lively fellow. With an air of indescribable dignity, Giglio checked their natural, but no more seemly, familiarity. Jones, Smith, my good friends, said the prince, disguise is henceforth useless. I am no more the humble student Giles, I am the descendant of a royal line. I know, old co. Cried Jones. He was going to say old cock, but a flash from the royal eye again on him. Friends, continued the prince, I am that Giglio, I am, in fact, Paphlagonia. Rise, Smith, and kneel not in the public street. Jones, thou true heart. My faithless uncle, when I was a baby, filched from me that brave crown my father left me, bred me, all young and careless of my rights, like unto hapless Hamlet, Prince of Denmark. And had I any thoughts about my wrongs, soothed me with promises of near redress. I should espouse his daughter, young Angelica. We two indeed should reign in Paphlagonia. His words were false, false as Angelica's heart. False as Angelica's hair, color, front teeth. She looked with her skew eyes upon young Bobo, Crim Tartary's stupid heir, and she preferred him. Twas then I turned my eyes upon Betsinda Rosalba, as she now is, and I saw in her the blushing sum of all perfection, the pink of maiden modesty, the nymph that my fond heart had ever wooed in dreams, etc. I don't give this speech, which was very fine, but very long, and though Smith and Jones knew nothing about the circumstances, my dear reader does, so I go on. The prince and his young friends hastened home to his apartment, highly excited by the intelligence, as no doubt by the royal narrator's admirable manner of recounting it, and they ran up to his room, where he had worked so hard at his books. On his writing table was his bag, grown so long that the prince could not help remarking it. He went to it, opened it, and what do you think he found in it? A splendid long, gold-handled, red velvet scabbarded, cut and thrust sword, and on the sheath was embroidered Rosalba Forever. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he drew out the sword, which flashed and illuminated the whole room, and called out Rosalba Forever. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Smith and Jones following him, but quite respectfully this time, and taking the time from His Royal Highness. And now his trunk opened with a sudden pony, and out there came three ostrich feathers in a gold crown, surrounding a beautiful shining steel helmet, a cuirass, a pair of spurs, finally a complete suit of armor. The books on Giglio's shelves were all gone. Where there had been some great dictionaries, Giglio's friends found two pairs of jackboots labeled, Lieutenant Smith, apostrophe apostrophe Jones Esquire, apostrophe which fitted them to a nicety. Besides, there were helmets, back and breastplates, swords, etc., just like in Mr. G. P. R. James' novels, and that evening three cavaliers might have been seen issuing from the gates of Bosforo, in whom the porters, proctors, etc., never thought of recognizing the young prince and his friends. They got horses at a livery stable keeper's, and never drew bridle until they reached the last town on the frontier before you come to Crim Tartary. Here, as their animals were tired, and the cavaliers hungry, they stopped and refreshed at an hostel. I could make a chapter of this, if I were like some writers, but I like to cram my measure tight down, you see, and give you a great deal for your money, and, in a word, they had some bread and cheese and ale upstairs on the balcony of the inn. As they were drinking, drums and trumpets sounded nearer and nearer, the marketplace was filled with soldiers, and His Royal Highness looking forth, recognized the Paphlagonian banners, and the Paphlagonian national air which the bands were playing. The troops all made for the tavern at once, and as they came up Giglio exclaimed, on beholding their leader, whom do I see? Yes. No. It is. Who? No, it can't be. Yes. It is my friend, my gallant faithful veteran, Captain Hetzoff. Ho! Hetzoff! Knowest thou not thy prince, thy Giglio? Good corporal, methinks we once were friends. Ha, sergeant, and my memory serves me right, we have had many a bout at single stick. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I faith, we have, a many, good my lord, apostrophe says the sergeant. Tell me, what means this mighty armament, apostrophe continued His Royal Highness from the balcony, and whither march my Paphlagonians? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Hetzoff's head fell. My lord, apostrophe he said, we march as the allies of Great Padella, Crim Tartary's monarch. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Crim Tartary's usurper, gallant Hetzoff. Crim Tartary's grim tyrant, honest Hetzoff. Apostrophe, apostrophe said the prince, on the balcony, quite sarcastically. A soldier, prince, must needs obey his orders. Mine are to help His Majesty Padella. And also, though alack, that I should say it. To seize wherever I should light upon him. Apostrophe, first catch your hare, ha, Hetzoff. Apostrophe exclaimed His Royal Highness. Apostrophe on the body of Giglio, Willem Prince of Paphlagonia Hetzoff went on, with indescribable emotion. My prince, give up your sword without ado. Look. We are 30,000 men to one. Apostrophe, give up my sword. Giglio give up his sword. Apostrophe cried the prince, and stepping well forward onto the balcony, the royal youth, without preparation, delivered a speech so magnificent, that no report can do justice to it. It was all in blank verse, in which, From this time, he invariably spoke as more becoming his majestic station. It lasted for 3 days and three nights, during which not a single person who heard him was tired, or remarked the difference between daylight and dark. The soldiers only cheering tremendously, when occasionally, once in 9 hours, the prince paused to suck an orange, which Jones took out of the bag. He explained, in terms which we say we shall not attempt to convey, the whole history of the previous transaction, and his determination, not only not to give up his sword, but to assume his rightful crown. And at the end of this extraordinary, this truly gigantic effort, Captain Hedzoff flung up his helmet, and cried, "Hooray! Hooray! Long live King Giglio!" Such were the consequences of having employed his time well at college. When the excitement had ceased, beer was ordered out for the army, and their sovereign himself did not disdain a little. And now it was with some alarm that Captain Hedzoff told him his division was only the advanced guard of the Paphlagonian contingent, hastening to King Padella's aid, the main force being a day's march in the rear under His Royal Highness Prince Bulbo. "We will wait here, good friend, to beat the prince," His Majesty said, "and then we'll make his royal father wince." XV. We return to Rosalba. King Padella made very similar proposals to Rosalba to those which he had received from the various princes who, as we have seen, had fallen in love with her. His Majesty was a widower, and offered to marry his fair captive that instant, but she declined his invitation in her usual polite, gentle manner, stating that Prince Giglio was her love, and that any other union was out of the question. Having tried tears and supplications in vain, this violent-tempered monarch menaced her with threats and tortures. But she declared she would rather suffer all these than accept the hand of her father's murderer, who left her finally, uttering the most awful imprecations, and bidding her prepare for death on the following morning. All night long the king spent in advising how he should get rid of this obdurate young creature. Cutting off her head was much too easy a death for her. Hanging was so common in His Majesty's dominions that it no longer afforded him any sport. Finally, he bethought himself of a pair of fierce lions which had lately been sent to him as presents, and he determined, with these ferocious brutes, to hunt poor Rosalba down. Adjoining his castle was an amphitheater, where the prince indulged in bull baiting, rat hunting, and other ferocious sports. The two lions were kept in a cage under this place. Their roaring might be heard over the whole city, the inhabitants of which, I am sorry to say, thronged in numbers to see a poor young lady gobbled up by two wild beasts. The king took his place in the royal box, having the officers of his court around, and the Count Agenarmo by his side, upon whom His Majesty was observed to look very fiercely. The fact is, royal spies had told the monarch of Agenarmo's behavior, his proposals to Rosalba, and his offer to fight for the crown. Black as thunder looked King Padella at this proud noble, as they sat in the front seats of the theater waiting to see the tragedy whereof poor Rosalba was to be the heroine. At length that princess was brought out in her nightgown, with all her beautiful hair falling down her back, and looking so pretty that even the beefeaters and keepers of the wild animals wept plentifully at seeing her. And she walked with her poor little feet, only luckily the arena was covered with sawdust, and went and leaned up against a great stone in the center of the amphitheater, round which the court and the people were seated in boxes, with bars before them, for fear of the great, fierce, red-maned, black-throated, long-tailed, roaring, bellowing, rushing lions. And now the gates were opened, and with a whirr-a-rawr-a-rawr two great lean, hungry, roaring lions rushed out of their den, where they had been kept for 3 weeks on nothing but a little toast and water, and dashed straight up to the stone, where poor Rosalba was waiting. "Commend her to your patron saints, all you kind people, for she is in a dreadful state." There was a hum and a buzz all through the circus, and the fierce King Padella even felt a little compassion. But Count Agenarmo, seated by His Majesty, roared out, "Hooray! Now for it! Su su su! apostrophe that nobleman being uncommonly angry still at Rosalba's refusal of him. But oh strange event! Oh remarkable circumstance! Oh extraordinary coincidence, which I am sure none of you could by any possibility have divined! When the lions came to Rosalba, instead of devouring her with their great teeth, it was with kisses they gobbled her up. They licked her pretty feet, they nuzzled their noses in her lap, they mooed, they seemed to say, "Dear, dear sister, don't you recollect your brothers in the forest?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, and she put her pretty white arms round their tawny necks, and kissed them. King Padella was immensely astonished. The Count Agenarmo was extremely disgusted. "Pooh!" apostrophe the Count cried. "Gammon!" exclaimed his lordship. Apostrophe, apostrophe, these lions are tame beasts come from Wombwell's or Astley's. It is a shame to put people off in this way. I believe they are little boys dressed up in doormats. They are no lions at all. Apostrophe, ha! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the king, you dare to say amen to your sovereign, do you? These lions are no lions at all, aren't they? Ho! My beefeaters! Ho! My bodyguard! Take this Count Agenarmo and fling him into the circus. Give him a sword and buckler, let him keep his armor on, and his weather eye out, and fight these lions. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the haughty Agenarmo laid down his opera glass, and looked scowling round at the king and his attendants. Touch me not, dogs! Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said, or by St. Nicholas the Elder, I will gore you. Your majesty thinks Agenarmo is afraid? No, not of 100,000 lions. Follow me down into the circus, King Padella, and match thyself against one of yon brutes. Thou darest not. Let them both come on, then. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and opening a grating of the box, he jumped lightly down into the circus. Whirr, 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 ah, ah, ah. In about 2 minutes the Count Agenarmo was gobbled up by those lions, bones, boots, and all. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.